Welcome to Security Architecture Podcast, where we help cybersecurity professionals to stay ahead of the curve and ensure they are successful in their cybersecurity journey.
Hi, I'm Evgeny.
Hi, I'm Dmitry.
We have Dave here from Kato Network. Dave, can you please introduce yourself and the company?
Good morning, folks. My name is Dave Greenfield. As Evgeny said, and thank you for having me on, Dmitry Evgeny. I am the technology evangelist at Kato Networks. Kato Networks was founded in 2015 by Shlomo Kramer, who was, as you probably know, one of the original founders of Checkpoint Software, and Gur Schatz, with the vision of creating a SASE platform back in 2015, 4 years before SASE was ever thought about. We'll get into that and more in the following few minutes.
Thank you for the introduction. And let's start from understanding what is the name of the offering that addressing the inbound browsing by Kato?
Everything Kato does is based around Kato Cloud. Kato Cloud, as I mentioned at the outset, is a fully developed secure access service edge platform. As you folks have probably know, SASE was first coined by Gartner back I guess it was November of last year. Was that right, guys? November?
Something like that.
Something like that, right. Okay, super. Excellent. So everything that we do is based around Kato Cloud. That would be the short of it all. It's a global cloud platform, cloud native platform, with POPs, more than 50 POPs worldwide, and delivers converged networking and security services, including, as you asked, about outbound browsing.
Yes, if I want to buy SASE outbound browsing from Kato Networks, I would call it Kato Cloud.
You're right.
I would like to get Kato Cloud.
That's right. So Kato today, and everything we talk about is today. I know Gartner, when they've talked about SASE, a lot of people think about SASE. They think about it as a future offering, right? Something that's in development, something that people are going to have in a couple of years' time. Everything I'm going to speak about today is available right now. You can call up Kato and order it. If you give me your credit card, I'll be happy to take that. No, that's a joke, guys.
Is this Kato?
What? Kato. Yes. Your viewers.
So there's a lot of talk about cloud security and products are based on cloud or based on services like SaaS. Can you talk about maturity of your product? Because a lot of people say, oh, you just move your boxes to the cloud, you know.
Absolutely.
Tell me about maturity of Kato.
Hundreds of customers, thousands of branch offices, tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands, I'm not quite sure what the right number is, of mobile users are accessing Kato today. Proven, well-developed architecture that's been working now for probably 5 years, maybe four and a half. And 4 years and 11 months or something like that, but who's counting? Kato as a platform, I think it's important that we just kind of define what we're talking about here. Kato is a global platform. You establish encrypted tunnels to Kato from all your various edges. So that means with your offices, we have an SD-WAN device that can sit in your branch office or your data centers. Your mobile users, you have a mobile client that can be used, or clientless access. You can publish applications, and users can be given their own portals in which to access those applications. And also your cloud resources, your cloud data centers, for example. We connect everything together through the Kato Cloud. This is a global backbone of POPs, and all those various edges establish encrypted tunnels into the nearest POP. And once they're connected to Kato, they're both getting connectivity and security. Right? So on the connectivity side, of course, you've got your QoS settings and your bandwidth management and everything that you would expect as a networking person. But at the same time, you're getting a complete security stack that's already been built into Kato.
We're going to jump to architecture questions in 1 second. We have one question before about license.
How do we license our product?
Yes.
By bandwidth.
Based on bandwidth,
right.
So can you elaborate more?
It's the price is going to vary by region. I'm not going to get into specific cases, right? There's packaging and things, but loosely speaking, the more bandwidth the more bandwidth an office consumes, the higher the price will be, or the lower the price will be, depending on
it. So it doesn't matter how many devices or how many laptops I have in my office.
That's right.
It still goes by bandwidth.
It goes by bandwidth.
And what about you know, people connecting from home? How does that
so work? And there, so that's for office users. For mobile users, you'll also have separate pricing based on the mobile client. That's a, you know, that's a separate item. No, the VPN license will be included. I mean, it's a package, so it really will depend on the particular configuration. Trust me, we have never lost a deal on price.
No, we're not talking about price. We're more talking about how do you license. Like, yeah.
What's the general model, the high level?
Right. No, I understand. But it's an important point, I think, that and we'll, this kind of moves us towards into an architecture that when you're speaking about a converged solution, Cato, like Cato, where all the software, everything is being developed at Cato. It allows Cato to bring tremendous value. None of the infrastructure that we use is third-party appliances. We're not licensing, I don't know, paying licensing fees for firewalls and for secure web gateway solutions and integrating them together, for example. Everything we're going to be talking about has been built by Cato from the ground up. And because of that, it allows Cato... I mean, it allows many, many benefits, but one of which is to deliver incredible value. Why don't we take a look at the architecture for a moment? Is that good?
Yes, okay. Actually, the next one online. So if you want to share your screen.
All right. We're going to try a screen share here. And if all goes well, which it probably won't, we got it. Voila. Okay. So I think you're seeing my screen. Is that right?
Yes, we do.
Yep.
Super. Okay. So with Cato, where you... in effect, converge the complete service stack that you see on the left-hand side of your screen into Cato Cloud, right? And we make that available globally across more than 50 POPs worldwide. We'll get into the exact locations in that in a minute. So how do we operate at a high level, right? As we said, first we connect all your devices into Cato Cloud. These are encrypted tunnels. That are established to the nearest Cato POP. Once that traffic is brought into Cato, we're then able to secure it. And we can speak more about the security services that we offer. But it's a complete range. So it's, you know, your anti-malware, right, your IPS. And this is applying equally to both your users, your office users, but also to your remote users. Right, so, you know, really, it's the complete enterprise which is being protected by one single holistic security stack. And then finally, we give you a very flexible management offering in order to run your network. You have a single pane of glass, both into your security and networking infrastructure. You can run it completely by yourself; it's completely self-service, or you can outsource it. You can, you know, outsource it to providers, or you can co-manage it. A lot of our customers do that. What they do is they outsource parts of the Cato management experience. At the same time, they retain the control to make changes as needed. Very flexible. So what does this look like? Oh, we'll get into the architecture in 1 second. Also, just understand that Cato today, when we speak about Cato, it's available in more than 50 POPs worldwide. We are a software-based architecture, a cloud-native architecture, which allows us to open up POPs very, very quickly. So this map, it's outdated already. We are opening new POPs all the time.
And it's right? Private POPs, or it's depend, could be public clouds or private POPs.
These are our POPs. This is, I mean, it's our, you know, running
the,
our
the infrastructure our is yours or the infrastructure. It's public cloud infrastructure.
The cloud that we're the ones that we're looking at here is all our infrastructure, I do believe. But, you know, if, for example, you say to us, look, we need to open up a POP, I don't know, give me some remote location that I don't know.
Barbados.
Thank you very much. Very, very critical. Let me just say, Dimitri, that when we open up a POP in Barbados, I want to be the one who does the service on it.
Exactly.
So because we are software, we have, you know, we have a number of options open to us, right? You know, and certainly one of those options is that if AWS happens to have a hosting center there, and that happens to be the best viable platform, we can certainly start there and migrate to a different platform if we want to, or stay there. We have a lot of flexibility, but these are private POPs that we're seeing right now. So we control all the routing, and everything about them. And, you know, let's dive into that for a moment, because I mentioned routing. So each of the POPs that we've talked about run our Converge software. And what that means is it's a software platform that Cato has developed internally. It provides all of the routing and the WAN optimization of the traffic. The traffic comes into the POPs, and the POPs themselves are interconnected by multiple tier one carriers, right? It's fully fault tolerant, fully redundant. So the software, our software is looking at the real-time conditions across those paths and selecting the optimum path to the next POP, right? That might be over one carrier. It might be over multiple carriers. It all depends, right? It might be in a direct hop, right? Or it might be indirect. It might be through multiple different hops, right? But all of that is happening over our network. It's not happening over the internet. There is no packet loss on the backbone. The latency on this backbone is nothing compared to the internet. It is far lower. And a number of our customers have told us that when they transfer files across Cato as opposed to the internet, they can see anywhere from 20 to 30x improvement in performance.
Just to understand what you say right now, if I'm in Europe and I browse a website in US, I hit a POP in Europe and I'm using your internal backbone to go to US. I'm not using the internet, correct?
It depends on how you want to set it up.
Okay.
I mean, honestly, right? So, you know, in general, you know, if you hit normally when you hit a website, right, performance isn't the issue, right? If you're browsing to CNN, right, it doesn't, you know, in which case your traffic would come up to our POP, and then it would be directed out of the POP to the local internet and then across the public internet. But let's suppose, for example, that you have a resource in the U.S., a data center in the U.S. You want to pull down, and you're pulling down files on a regular basis from that data center, right? You can, with a few clicks on our management screen, you can change the routing very easily so that you exit the traffic at the data center or at the POP that's closest to this data center that you want to get to. I want you to hold your question for one moment, because we're going to talk about that in just a second, if that's okay, right? Thank you so much. This architecture is fully self-healing, right? So you don't, you know, so often when you do network engineering, I mean, I'll confess, although I am not a network engineer, I've been around networking for an awfully long time. So my mother thinks I'm a network engineer, but I'm not. But I do have tremendous respect for network engineers. And I spent a lot of time drinking coffee with network engineers. And you hear about, especially in legacy systems, but all the time that's gone into you know, HA into redundancy planning, right? It's not sufficient that you just have you have parallel links, but you need to have failover. You need to manage that failover. You need to do scenario planning. With a self-healing architecture, that's not an issue. We maintain the software layer for you. As changes in the network happen, we're updating the routing so that the applications themselves are not being affected. In addition, Cato provides a complete security stack in Cato Cloud. That includes a next generation firewall and a secure web gateway. We also have advanced threat prevention as well, and cloud and mobile security. The details of which, probably a little bit out of scope here, we can certainly talk about it. But I think the message to take away with is, you walk out with a robust enterprise-grade security stack for all of your resources. So this is a single policy set that you're able to set up based on it's identity-aware. So it could be based on the user's identity or based on IP address as is done in legacy systems that governs your entire network. One policy set, your entire network. So how do we connect you into Cato Cloud? We have, of course, with offices, we have our Edge SD-WAN devices, the Cato sockets. I mean, they have the features that you would normally expect to see in an SD-WAN device, active-active, dynamic path selection, things of that sort. As I mentioned, we are fully identity aware. So not just on the security side, but also on the networking side, you can define your QoS policies based on user identity. So I'll give you a great example why this matters. You might, for example, have, you like to prioritize VoIP, right? But let's be honest, some VoIP conversations are probably more important than other VoIP conversations in your enterprise. Perhaps your sales conversations are more important than Dave's conversations. So with identity-aware QoS, you're able to prioritize based on the role or the function within the organization. And then finally, we've got packet loss mitigation to overcome last mile packet loss.
And how about Dave. I have a question around that. So, you know, using a user identity, would you be able to set different policies that allowing different users to access different resources? So, example, if I'm an administrative worker and, there is a developer in the company, I want the developer to be able to access the source code, review some pull request or anything like that.
If you're asking me, are we able to set access to resource access based on user role? So yes, absolutely. Right. And that's through an LDAP sync that we do. We synchronize with AD. And we pull in all those AD objects, and then that gives you the hierarchy within your organization. You're able, and then you would set a policy based on that.
And you can define in the policy which resources, which websites, which URLs they can access and which they cannot.
You can define, yes. So that's on the branch side. On the data center side, we also have a Cato socket, the 1700. It's a little bit larger, obviously, because it is a data center. In addition, a lot of organizations, for whatever reason, prefer not to touch a data center configuration, at least initially. So you can also connect through IPsec, and establish an IPsec tunnel from your native firewall, existing firewall into Cato Cloud. And of course, we support a hybrid configuration as well. So your branch offices can connect back to the data center, not just through the internet, but also across your existing MPLS network as well. We've been talking about mobile users. Cato now for a fair number of years has been offering the Cato mobile client. And that's a client that runs on your mobile device and it establishes a tunnel to the nearest Cato POP. In addition, we recently introduced clientless access, or actually improved clientless access, so that, like I mentioned to you before, you can now publish specific applications to your users. Users get a login for a given application portal, and voila, they connect to that portal using your existing, your SSL, your credentials that you've issued to them, and they now see just the applications that you give them access to, right? And it's just a matter of clicking on the application, and you're in. Right. So you folks probably know this. The nice thing about that approach is that it is, of course, the degree of security. If I give users access to the network, there's always the risk that you're putting them a password away from accessing resources across the network that you may not want them to access. Now, it's true that Cato is, largely a global firewall, and so we provide a high degree of control over that. But that's the classic answer against mobile clients in general, VPN clients in general. The clientless access, the nice thing is that literally they can only see the applications that you published for them, right? And then you asked earlier, Evgeny, about cloud integration, and we talked about accessing cloud resources. So let's just touch on that. Okay, Cato POPs are co-located in the same physical data centers as AWS and Azure. What that means then is through a slight modification of my management console, I can direct my cloud traffic from the branch office over here right to the POP that's sitting inside the data center, the same physical data center as my AWS or Azure resources. In effect, I am getting nearly end-to-end optimized delivery, right? It's optimized across the Cato backbone. By the way, we do have WAN optimization in our backbone. And then it's just a short hop across the local area network of the data center to get into the to get into the cloud data center, into Azure or AWS. And then finally, we can do something very similar with your cloud applications, right? So once again, you know, make some software changes, and now the traffic exits the POP that's nearest to the cloud application of your choice. So if it's Office 365, you tell us where your repository is, and we, if you want, can do it yourself, can steer the traffic across the Cato global private backbone directly to the footstep of that instance.
How the system scaling for customer demand? I'm sure that you had a huge increase in demand. How did system scale for, you know,
excellent
all
question.
Of this sudden
excellent
spike
question.
Of users and activity?
To give you an idea, I think we were growing at about 20% per month or so up until COVID-19. And if you look at the graph, I'm speaking about mobile traffic now, right? Right, mobile traffic was growing about 10, 15, 20% each month. You know, it's kind of gradually growing. And then it hits COVID-19 and it grew like 200. I think in 2 months it was 220%. Like it shot right up.
It's a good problem to have.
That's a good problem to have, exactly. And the great thing about Cato is, you know, to us and to our users, it really makes no difference where people operate. Right? You want to work at your office, or you want to work on the road. It really makes no difference. The same policies can be maintained. You don't need to change your tools, your security tools, your security infrastructure is equally suitable. To get to your point, you know, Cato engineers are maintaining the Cato POPs. These are massively scalable systems. And we can't go into the Cato architecture here; it'll take us too long. But we've got plenty of compute power. And network bandwidth and between the POPs, and we ensure that there's sufficient capacity to, you know, for our users' traffic, and we've never had a problem. It is. I also want to highlight that, you know, if you were speaking about your own VPN server, like in your office, right? Let's be frank. That's how a lot of companies operate, right? They have a VPN server in the data center, and all the users connect back to that server, and then. From there, they gain access to the company resources. In such an environment, then you've got redundant servers. You have to scale and maintain those servers. The nice thing about the Cato architecture is that users are being distributed across all the POPs, right? You've got over 50 POPs where users can connect to, and this is also self-healing. So, in the event, for example, that you couldn't gain access to one of the POPs for whatever reason. Then the Cato client that you're running will automatically connect to another POP, right? So I mean, you're inherently distributed systems I don't need to tell you guys this, you know this, right? Distributed systems are inherently more scalable than centralized systems.
Makes sense,
right? That makes sense.
If I have more questions, I want to dive a bit more about the Office integration and how it connects from like a branch. So there's the SD-WAN component from your device. I'm guessing I can work with other SD-WAN providers as well?
There is. So today, Cato provides both the SD-WAN edge device and provides Cato Cloud, right? I suppose theoretically, if another SD-WAN provider can establish an IPsec tunnel that they would be able to connect into the Cato POP, we would not encourage that configuration.
You will not? Sorry, or you will do?
We would not encourage that configuration.
So if a customer already has an SD-WAN box, you suggest them to move to your box?
We would suggest a migration to our box. Our boxes are very affordable. Okay. We know the platform. The platform has been tested. You know, I don't see any benefit to maintaining a third-party appliance in that configuration.
If they don't want to buy an SD-WAN from you and they have a small firewall, for example, can they still do an IPsec or GRE tunnel to you?
Cato does have a variety of configurations. And if you're asking me, do we sell our private backbone to as other SD-WAN providers? Right, that's not a configuration that we encourage, and that's not or we would recommend. Would we price that out for a given customer? It's really a sales question. I can't answer that. We'd have to ask that.
So for the branches, you prefer to have your boxes for the best.
Exactly.
I guess.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And the data set.
The boxes, they use standard IPsec connection, or is there any other optimizations or anything you're doing on top of that?
So about the network optimizations you're asking me?
I'm talking about the IPsec tunnel that's created between the box and the cloud in the Kato cloud.
I believe we're using a DTLS connection, but you know, I can take a look and find out if that's really important. It is pretty standard in IPsec. I think, you know, part of what you have to realize, to come back to your question, Evgeny, my hesitancy in it, is that in a conventional SD-WAN appliance, you're talking about a very thick edge, right? All the processing is happening over here, right? In your edge SD-WAN. I'm assuming you guys can see my screen still, right?
Yes, we do. We do.
Yeah. Super. Okay, so it's all right, and those boxes are connecting with one another directly. They're usually establishing. Mm-hmm. The tunnels of some kind, right? A fully meshed tunnel. But the point is that you've got a very, very heavy edge architecture, right? Kato does not believe in that approach at all. We believe that the edge should have as little processing as possible, right? Just enough intelligence, enough processing to get the packets into our core where we can do the heavy lifting, right? And the reason for that is very simple. Number one, if I have a thin edge, it's much easier to deploy. Number two, as traffic scales, I don't need to scale my box. Or, to put it another way, my box can be incredibly scalable because there's very little processing that's happening at the edge. With a conventional SD-WAN appliance, particularly if I start loading, like if I start running VNFs in it and I start loading security processing in it, it's, you know, every time I start having to decrypt traffic, or every time I see a spike in traffic, I need to start thinking about upgrading my box, and there's a huge cost around
that. I totally agree with what you're saying. I just, my mind was going, let's say I have a store, and I have a retail, and there's like 1,000 branches, and every branch has a small firewall with Wi-Fi.
Right.
So would you tell them to replace the small firewall? Or you'll put your SD-WAN appliance with the firewall together, as an example?
In general, we would look to install the Kato client, the Kato socket at the end endpoint. There's a lot of benefits to that, a lot of management benefits, a lot of visibility benefits, that can be gained. It's a platform, obviously, that we know. It's not a third-party device that that we're dealing with. Also, don't forget that with our Edge SD-WAN device, if a tunnel to the pop drops, our Kato socket would automatically find the next pop and the next pop and the next pop, right? Okay. So there's a tremendous resiliency built into that. Will your firewall do that? Maybe, I don't know.
Probably not with your system. So you basically tell them, because in some cases you don't have all the functionalities like Wi-Fi, for example. So you have to be with the firewall together.
Right. If a customer is looking for Wi-Fi, we do not offer Wi-Fi today, and you would need to have the firewall today, or the Wi-Fi device, whatever that is, whatever whatever your access point is, and certainly if a customer would come to us, a retail customer would come to us and say to us, hey, okay, we really want to maintain our firewalls, then we would work with them. But one of our customers, Pet Lovers, is a retail chain in the Asia Pacific. I think they've got 130 stores. They had 130 different firewalls at one time that they were running, right? And you can imagine the sort of headaches that came with that. With Kato, you're maintaining a single policy set for all your firewalls. It makes your administration tremendously easy. And if there's a new threat, there's many, many reasons for getting a Kato socket out.
Let's switch to branch to the end user.
Okay.
Tell us a bit about the client you guys have, on which I'm guessing it's working on laptops and mobile devices as well.
Sure.
And you already, that does it? Is it a Mac, Windows, and Android?
Yes. Yes.
Gotcha. So the
client is you can install it on a PC or a mobile without having the box, or you always need the box.
You mean the mobile device?
So can I install a client, a software on a mobile device? and connect directly to
Oh, absolutely.
Cloud, or I always need to go through the SD-WAN device?
No. So you just get an email from your IT team, basically. That gives you a link. You connect on the link. You go to, download your, it's an Android or depending on what it is, you just download the client. Click on the link, you download the client, install it, and it comes pre-configured, and you're up and running in minutes. Guys, I got to tell you something. And we're so happy you asked me this question. I'm so happy we're doing it now after COVID-19. We have any number of customers who've rolled out. The one that I'm thinking of, GeoSyntech Consultants, rolled out, I think it was 1,200 remote users in about a half an hour.
Wow. So this brings an interesting question that we get asked a lot. What preventing me as an end user just disable the client and do whatever I want?
It's a feature of the OS is the short answer. And, in Windows, it's a feature of the OS. You'd have to ask Microsoft.
So is it password protected? It's just disabled? I don't see it? Or
there is a, so with us, it's just a checkbox. And when you enable that feature, the OS, we're taking advantage of a feature within Windows that prevents you from disabling it.
Oh, okay.
How Windows does that, I don't know.
No. I was just wondering if there's an option to disable it or something like this.
You can't, so as the IT administrator, you can make that decision, right? You can force it so that it's always enabled no matter what, or you can leave it up to the user. It really is your, you decide what you want to do.
Okay. In certain cases, would the client be checking if you have an antivirus or you patched or you parted the domain and it will prevent you to connect to Cato network, for example? Basically like a host checker. Is this something that would?
Conditional based connectivity, yes. You're asking.
Yeah.
Excellent. Excellent point. That is a feature that we're looking at. I'm not going to give you a preview of, of what we're coming up with, but let's just say that it is a feature that we're looking at very, very closely.
Is this from a customers or something that part of your development?
Everything that we do comes from customers. I mean, every feature that we release is in response to or anticipation of a customer demand. Right, and 99% is in response to the customer.
If you can share, maybe what was the reason why the customer wanted this feature?
Conditional based connectivity. It's just an additional layer of security, right? So, if, for example, I want to make sure that a device is properly patched before connecting into my network, that would be one scenario, right? And today, Cato can check if it's part of the domain, right? Remember, once we've synced with Active Directory, if you can't access Active Directory, then you can't log into the network, right? Okay. So we are authenticating against AD, but you're asking specifically about the state of the device, right? And that is something that we're looking at very closely.
You mentioned Active Directory. I'm guessing you also can work with Okta, One Logging, the major.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
I have a question. You guys have a very self kind of sufficient infrastructure. Do you guys OEM your solution maybe to somebody else? Or there's a different way to consume your solution, not through you, through ISP or MSSP or kind of integrated with somebody else?
So certainly MSPs, we have partners that do offer our solution. And if you go up on our website, you can see that. But if you're asking me, is it currently branded by another company that's out there, right? No, that's not the case, right? Cato is there. It is a Cato product. It may be resold, and it is resold by partners, obviously. But it is a Cato product.
Great. So outbound browsing, it's part of Security Web Gateway, and we went to Gartner, look how they define Security Web Gateway and what they mean by this. And they define certain criteria that it's supposed to have as part of Web Gateway. So we're going to ask you some questions that are related to this infrastructure. And awesome. The first one in the area is going to be, tell me about blocking of URLs based on categories.
So I want to step back for a second and make sure that we've kind of walked through the Cato architecture, right? And we've talked about that. But sitting behind the Cato architecture are our operations teams. In the case of Cato, our security team is constantly updating our security architecture. And what they're doing is we have developed a massive data warehouse of the metadata of all traffic flows for all customers crossing our network. Right, so that's more than a terabyte a day of data that's being gathered. And against that massive data set, we have machine learning algorithms that are running. And they are doing any number of things. And then they're passing up the results back up to a team of security analysts, right? That's a very general way of describing how our managed threat detection and response architecture, or I should say our offering, works, right? They're mining that data, they're validating that data for threats, and then when they're finding threats, they're contacting our Cato MDR customers and informing them of those potential threats. We're not talking about MDR, I understand that, but the reason why I bring that up is because as part of that process, so we are taking URL feeds, your threat intelligence feeds, and we are not only, so the traditional ways of categorizing URLs, we are getting that, and as a Cato customer, you benefit from that. But in addition to that, the biggest problem with threat intelligence feeds and with URL categorization, as you know, is that so many URLs are not categorized. What do you do if a hacker or, an attacker creates a URL now, 2 minutes ago? It's not going to have a reputation on it. Reputation can't, right? It's too new, right? And so it has to be categorized as uncategorized. And now as an IT manager, you need to decide whether are you going to allow access to uncategorized websites or aren't you, right? If you block, you're going to be annoying quite a few users, aren't you? Right?
Oh, for sure.
If you allow, then you're creating, a problem for yourself. So what our security analysts have done is they have identified the characteristics of malware, of malicious sites, and by looking at those characteristics, they're able to detect which sites are malicious or which aren't malicious. So if, for example, I have a piece of malware that routinely goes back to a particular site as a CNC server, right? Okay, that tells me something, right? That gives me a piece of information that I need to know. If it's something that, if it's a URL that has never been accessed before, remember, Cato is both looking at the network layer and the application layer, right? We're a converged solution. So we're, our ability to assess the threat level of a website also comes back to the network characteristics. If a URL has never been accessed before, that tells us something, right?
Can you look into the traffic that flows to the website? I mean, TLS connection.
Right. Exactly. So we do, obviously we do decrypt at wire speed. By the way, right? We go back to your point about appliances. Mm-hmm. Right, quick question to you guys as security people, right? A firewall, when I give you a throughput on a firewall, right, does it vary if encryption is enabled or if SSL intercept is enabled or disabled?
It's not just this, it's also vary by the size of the key. It's basically
exactly
more important.
Yeah. Exactly. But certainly we've all seen how when SSL intercept is enabled, right, edge firewalls usually will exhibit lower throughput, right? I used to be in the network computation space.
This will also impact your hardware as well, I'm guessing.
Exactly. So no, Cato operates at line speed, at wire rate, period, right? So we take the encrypted, and that's the benefit of operating in the cloud, right? By operating in the cloud, we have the benefit of cloud scaling, of elasticity, of a cloud, of resources, right? So we can use all the compute resources of the cloud that you just don't have available to you in an appliance.
In order to decrypt the traffic, you need to have some type of certificate authority
keys.
Allowed.
Right, exactly, right. So today we only look at the metadata of the traffic. And, I should say, we also look at the content for purposes of security inspection, right? But in terms of what's being stored in our data warehouse, the only thing that we're storing in the data warehouse is the metadata of the traffic.
I click on the link and I'm going to download the malicious file over TLS 1.2 connection.
We will get it. You
would decrypt it completely and you would inspect that file and we'll alert and block. Would you block it?
We would block it and alert you to it. Right. So Cato, you're speaking about anti-malware. Cato has two kinds of anti-malware engines that run within Cato Cloud. At the most basic is a signature-based system. We are taking, the threat intelligence feeds and the signatures that are well known, and we run all files across that against those signatures. But that's not going to help you with zero-day threats, right? Or polymorphic encryption, for example, right? Those are things that won't be picked up by a signature-based system. So in addition to that, we've partnered with SentinelOne, the endpoint manufacturer. We've taken, and I think this is we're the only ones who have done this, we've taken the SentinelOne engine and we run it within our network, right? So it's a network-based implementation of the SentinelOne engine. The SentinelOne engine is very interesting because what they've done is they've taken millions of malware samples, they've analyzed them, and they can detect the characteristics of malware. And from that, they can determine whether or not malware is present or not. To answer your question, Dimitri, so your piece of malware, your download would come in, we would run it against the initial system, and then we would run it also against the SentinelOne engine.
How fast is this operation? Is it affecting user experience?
My friends, I've never had a user complain about the performance of inspection. In fact, if you go up on our website, we've got a great article that explains why we've chosen that approach and not sandboxing. As you probably know, with sandboxing, there's a delay that gets introduced that as you execute your code within the sandbox, you have to wait. You have to wait for it to execute and run.
That's right.
And so that generally means that sandboxing is not a great inline solution. And for that reason, we've taken the approach that I've just described, and it allows us to operate inline and not affect your performance.
Interesting. So how about detecting a malicious content and hosted within the website? As an example, if there is some malicious piece of JavaScript or Flash, for example, and I'm accessing this website, would you be able to detect that and actually remove it from the traffic that I'm consuming? How does it work in your case?
That's a good question. I don't know the answer to that. I mean, the easy answer, let's assume that we're not blocking the URL, right? Let's assume it's a URL that's been permitted, like, I don't know, CNN.com, right?
Yeah.
So it's got a great reputation, and someone now has injected a piece of malicious Java code in the URL.
How about that? You can get us maybe a question and answer later on, and we will include it as part of podcast description.
Absolutely. Yeah. I'd be happy to.
Because you protecting the end user to browse the internet, and the shadow IT idea of people using services that are not supposed to be used is very, very, very popular. Can you please speak about what you guys do about shadow IT? What kind of reporting, protection, and help for the customers to understand sanctioned and unsanctioned apps they have in their environment?
Because really what you're asking me is what kind of visibility do we have into the traffic flow, right?
Into traffic flow, maybe a way to mark application as sanctioned or unsanctioned, and help the IT managers, IT security managers, to understand what kind of applications they have, and maybe potentially change their policy to say, okay, Dropbox is blocked, for example.
So let's just take a quick look at Cato here for a moment. You're looking at the overall, at the Cato management screen. Obviously, this is a fictitious company, but the interface looks very much like you're seeing. I'll just walk you through. This is your capabilities go down the left-hand side of your screen. So you get your networking, your security, your analytics. The number of users that are connected. There's 3 out of 16 remote users that are currently connected to the site. 11 of 11 sites are online, and these can be both your branch offices, your cloud resources, your headquarters. And finally, 4 out of 4 security services are active. On your right-hand side of your screen, you have, you know, your overall throughput, and then you have the top applications that are being run across the, you know, that are running running across your network. In this case, we've drilled down into a particular site. Now, you've asked about application performance, so I'm not going to spend too much time here, but you can see that this is giving you detailed metrics on the link behavior, right? So here, this particular site had three links that are aggregated into one, right? And we're showing them packet loss and throughput metrics. And this is looking at your real-time metrics, again, operating across the site. I want to just see here. Now, again, I'm just doing this. You'll have to excuse me because I didn't. There are relevant screens here that I would have pulled up for you,
so having I know, you had the I known you're top applications,
So if I'm not getting into it right now, we can certainly get to it. But in this case, you're seeing the throughput of the individual action. But that's actually what I want to show you. I think this is the yes. Okay. So in this case, in this view, it happens to be at this time. We're not showing the username because this is a demo account. But you would see the actual user, right, the username. You would see the subnet on their the IP or host name. And then you can get you can see their usage both upstream and downstream, right? So that gives you an overall view of the users. But then you could drill in by application, by domain that are being used. And, of course, you can drill down further by user. Let me see what we have here, right here. And probably a little bit clearer for you, right?
Yeah. So is there CASB capabilities in the product?
There are CASB capabilities within Cato. We don't bill ourselves as a CASB, but we certainly enable you to have a very detailed view of what your customers are doing or what your users are doing on the network, both in terms of the SaaS applications that are being accessed, as well the cloud applications or cloud resources, as well as the URLs that you're accessing, as well as your internal applications. So you can see all of that. You can see that by user, by how much traffic is being consumed for each of them.
What about DLP? It's a very popular topic about what's leaving my environment, the data leakage prevention.
Excellent question, thank you. We've looked at DLP. We are not offering DLP today. And we internally, we sort of go back and forth as to whether or not we want to do DLP or not, to be honest with you. You know, DLP is one of those things that certainly a lot of people have asked for, but all too often we find that when we really probe into the need or the perceived need, it's not clear to us as to how much of an ask that we're hearing from our prospects. I'm not saying that people there may be other people in the market who do want it, right? But from what we're hearing from our customers, it's still an open question.
If the customer wants a DLP with your platform, would you partner with someone else or just suggest them to use an endpoint solution?
Yeah, we're always happy to look at potential partnerships with companies. I can only tell you what we have what we're offering today.
Makes sense.
So it would be untruthful for me to say to you that we offer DLP today. We don't. What we do in the future, it's difficult to say. I mean, anything is possible in the future.
Last question about Security Web Gateway. Bandwidth control. You briefly mentioned in the beginning that you guys can do very sophisticated bandwidth control.
Sure. Yes. So what would you like to know?
What you're asking. What you guys can do? What's my options? What's people asking? What people doing?
Let me just see. You know, now you've got me into our system here, or at least into the screenshots of our system. I'm wondering if I'm not sure I have the right screenshot to show you.
It's okay. You can just talk about this. You know, what's the option? What's
no problem
possible
at all.
Can I limit YouTube? You know, can I limit?
Of course. So, of course, you have to understand that while Cato is a security company, it's also a networking company, right? And so, you know, bandwidth shaping and is something that's been, you know, it's been delivered by networking companies for years now, right? So, for example, you know, when customers first join Cato, they can set policy based on percentage of bandwidth. That's usually the best thing to do. Not amount of bandwidth, right? Not to say I want to allocate 5 megs to Facebook and 10 megs to VoIP or something. It's much better to allocate based on percentage, because you never know what kind of link that individual user is going to be running, right? So you usually want to say, okay, 50% to application X, 20% to application Y. And we certainly allow you to do both, actually. Cato is also interesting because the QoS that we set not just operates upstream, it also operates downstream. So this is interesting. So normally when you're talking about internet applications, particularly like something like UCAS, right? Like UCAS is very important. VoIP, you want to be able to always control bandwidth and
Zoom
shape
calls,
traffic
example.
Accordingly. Zoom calls, for example, right?
We're doing right now.
So when you start talking about UCAS, edge devices typically have a problem because you're going to the internet. They can't control downstream QoS. They can control upstream QoS, right? But they can't impose QoS on internet traffic because they're not seeing it until it hits them. Mm-hmm. That makes sense?
Yes.
Yep. Okay. So with Cato, that's not the case. All traffic, upstream and downstream traffic, is coming through the Cato POP. And that means then even on the downstream, we can prioritize VoIP and make sure you get a rich VoIP experience.
Thank you. Awesome.
So how can the customer POC your solution?
Well, if you just go to catonetworks.com, you'll see a Contact Us button at the upper hand corner. Click on that, and POCs can happen very, very quickly. I mean, very quickly, right?
You know, the process looks like?
How does the process look like?
Yeah, from a customer perspective.
Sales will reach out, we'll scope the POC with you, we'll determine the nature of your environment, the criteria for success. A POC, this is not a long process for us. We can pay a POC within a week, right? We have customers, prospects who I've spoken to, who initially decided to go with another platform. And when they ran into problems, they called up Cato on Saturday night. On Saturday, over the weekend, they called up Cato and requested that we urgently get them our kit. They had everything installed by Tuesday.
But by kit, right? You mean like an agent or the hardware? Or
kit, I'm meaning a kit, the Cato sockets. I'm sorry.
That's divine appliances.
Right. I mean, and keep in mind that, to POC Cato is remarkably easy. So if you wanted to, we could start you off with a VPN client. So you get that experience. And this is a one-legged POC, right? Mm-hmm. Just a VPN client, that's it, right? Yep. No infrastructure
just
installed.
Just
right?
A little software to install it, configure
that's
it.
That's it, right.
You just remind me a question that I forgot to ask. With your agent, is it all ports and protocols?
Is it all ports and protocols?
Everything, not just HTTP and HTTPS, all ports are going
to UDP will be covered as well, right?
Yes.
Okay.
So, we can give you the mobile client. You can experience it, and then if you say fine, we want to try out the Cato socket, right? You only need one socket, right? Mm-hmm. One socket, because the other side, the side of your data center that quite often you can't get into very easily, you can just establish the IPsec tunnel from your firewall, right? So it's a one-legged deployment. This is remarkably easy, folks, right? I'm sorry.
Sir, we spoke about technology partnership a bit. You mentioned your partnership with SentinelOne. Any other technology partnership you guys have right now?
No, that's really the one I think I would highlight. I hope I'm not missing anything, but I think that's the one that comes to mind.
Awesome.
Sometimes you can have a senior moment and forget things. But everything we spoke about in Cato is software code that we built ourselves, right?
It's remarkable.
And it's remarkable, and it allows us then to do a one-pass architecture. We talked before about performance. I should have highlighted this before. But as we, as we look at the path of the pack, as it were, as traffic comes into Cato Cloud, we are applying all of our optimizations and all of our inspections in parallel. Think about that for a second. Normally what happens is that if you're running discrete devices, discrete appliances, you'd have to, de-encrypt the packet, right? The appliance would de-encrypt the packet. It would inspect it, re-encrypt, send it over to the next device, and then it would repeat the process. That's not the case with Cato. When it comes in, the packet hits the Cato POP, it gets de-encrypted, in all of the security network optimizations, the security inspections and network optimizations are applied in parallel, and then the packet moves on, right? That's a tremendous improvement in performance.
So we have last question before we move to open chat.
Absolutely.
Yeah, David, so tell us a little bit about a report or metric would show the state before I start using Cato and after, and maybe something that, you know, I would take to the board of CISO.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. So Cato has very detailed reporting, as I think we touched on some of that before. I'm not quite sure of the specific report that you're referring to, though.
It's not a report that we know. Is it something that you tell the customer, Mr. Customer, we did a POC, you've been running for a year. Here is the report you can tell the board to justify why we got Cato. This is the benefit. This is how we operate.
That's how we operated before, and that's how we operate now with Cato.
Absolutely, absolutely. So I don't know that there's any one report that we have that does that. I think you need to define your customer success criteria and then almost work backwards towards that. We certainly provide you with reporting capabilities, but again, it really depends on why the customer has chosen Cato. So for example, if they were having performance problems, right, we can certainly show you a difference in performance, file transfer performance, for example, before and after Cato. Right.
How about that? I'll ask you a different question. What is your three favorite customer reports right now?
So there, I'll tell you something. It's not something that I can demo right here. But Cato has a built-in SIM in its system, right? Mm-hmm. And it is unbelievable what you can do with that. If we come back a little bit later, I can pull out some screenshots for you and share it with you then. But basically, it allows you to parse all of your security and networking events and drill down into problems. So if, for example, you were speaking about VoIP before, let's suppose you were having a VoIP problem or a CEO was having a VoIP problem, coming from his branch office, we allow you to parse all of the events and identify the specific nature of that problem. Again, it's not something I'd have to show it to, but it's really
okay. I guess this is what customer likes a lot as extra benefit.
It's one of the things that customers like from a troubleshooting standpoint. I'm not sure that's exactly what they would use for an executive presentation. Dimitri, you're going to ask something.
Do you integrate with the known SIEMs seamlessly?
I mean, you can export the data from Cato and import it into a SIEM. But for the most part, you know, our customers tend to prefer to working within the Cato management environment.
But that environment is running on your cloud, right? I mean, SIEM is in your cloud, and it's based on the traffic that you analyze.
And it's based on the Cato. That's right. But you can export the data.
What is the way to export it?
We have a script that you run.
So you work with Splunk, Curators, McAfee's,
we have a script that you run. You export the data, that you can import it however way you want.
And what is the format of the data?
I'd have to find out and get back to you folks. It's been a while since I did it.
Not a problem. We actually done with the official list of questions, and we're kind of moving to open discussions. So, Dave, anything else you want to add that we didn't talk? You mentioned MDR, for example, it's quite interesting, or maybe anything else about the platform.
Super. Okay, so let's take a look for a moment at what makes Cato a SASE solution. I know you guys have talked about SASE in the past, so I'm not going to rehash what is SASE. Assume your viewers understand that. But I want to talk about how Cato aligns with Gartner's SASE framework. And, you know, at the core, SASE consists of four things. First of all, it requires customers, it requires SASE solutions to be fully converged, right? To converge the WAN edge and network security markets. And let me just say parenthetically, the quotes that you're seeing here are the actual Gartner quotes from their document, right? This is not us. This is what Gartner says about SASE. So if you're not converging networking and security, you're not a SASE solution, right? That's probably kind of obvious. Right. In addition, Gartner strongly favors a cloud-native, cloud-based delivery for SASE platforms. If the convergence is happening in the endpoint and not happening in the cloud, it's really just a repeat of everything we've seen in the past. Right. What makes SASE so unique is that it is a converged architecture in the cloud, and thereby it can service the entire enterprise. Converging at the edge, you can only service that particular site, right? You can't service the entire enterprise. The other point is that it's global. It's not sufficient that SASE be delivered within a particular region or you know, a particular town, but it's got to be delivered everywhere, because frankly, you don't know where you're going, where your remote users are going to be operating from. You don't know where your partners are going to be operating from. Having a global footprint is critical. And then finally, of course, it has to service all edges, right? You know, not just your offices, but also your mobile users, as we've been speaking about, and your cloud-based users. Is that clear? You guys are being kind of quiet there. It always scares me.
We're just listening, you know.
Okay. So what isn't SASE, right? Right. And I think this is really, really important to understand. SASE is not about chaining point solutions together, right? You know, you can have many, many products covering networking security, but if they're not converged, if customers are forced to integrate them or pay for somebody else to integrate them, that's not SASE, right? So it's also, as we mentioned, you know, it's not about on-premise boxes, right? You know, on-premise boxes, you know, whether it's for SD-WAN and security, and they don't really come with the cloud service architecture, it makes it very, very difficult to distribute those capabilities across the globe, right? As we mentioned, if you're operating outside of a given office where your on-premise box is sitting, you can't benefit from them. But in addition, it makes it very challenging to deliver those function to deliver that functionality, not just to other offices, but to a mobile user. So, you know, on-premise box is not really a great thing. And finally, it's not just the telco bundle. I love this quote personally. You know, Gartner says SASE is an existential threat to on-premise CPE strategy, as telcos will lack the ability to effectively compete with over-the-top SASE providers. Telco and service providers in general they're really on the toughest position. You know, not only do they have on-premise boxes, and they have an on-premise box strategy, but they don't even own the core networking security functionality. They have to OEM that, which of course impacts their costs and it impacts their support quality and their service roadmap velocity. So, you know, that's also not a great approach to SASE. So, you know, how does SASE then make WAN transformation easier? What we're talking about is that it future-proofs your network. So if you have, you know, let's suppose for a moment that you're starting out with Kato SASE platform and an Edge SD-WAN device. Do you guys understand what I mean by Edge SD-WAN devices? Do we need to give vendor names here?
No, we don't. Okay,
but it's pretty well understood. You decide to replace MPLS increase bandwidth. That sounds great. But then you also decide, okay, well, I need to support global sites. Well, Edge SD-WAN devices operate over the internet. The internet, particularly the global internet, is inherently unreliable. Okay, so you now need to go out and integrate a global backbone. Once you know you've done that, you know, now you also need to perhaps deliver secure access from the branch office. After all, I mean, if you understand SD-WANs, you understand that in order for SD-WANs to have the kind of cost savings that they've espoused over MPLS, you really need to be taking advantage of local internet. So that means now that somehow you need to get next generation firewall or UTM capabilities out to the branch, yet another appliance that has to go on. You know, we've mentioned about supporting mobile users with secure web gateways. Yet another device. You see where I'm going, folks, right? You know, maybe you want to optimize your mobile access, right? With SDP or ZTNA. Okay, that's yet another, you know, another appliance or solution that you need to install. You know, and sure enough, you need to manage the whole thing, and now you need to juggle all these interfaces together and integrate them together. You know, with Kato, this is very easy. This is just a matter of a few clicks on your management screen. But with other approaches, they all become major, you know, integration projects. Another way to look at this is the cost of point solutions. This isn't just their financial costs, but the burden of evaluating, buying, integrating, maintaining, and troubleshooting individual components. So here we've got mobile cloud security and network, and it's all being managed, and somehow that has to be integrated all together. You know, and with a SASE solution, those costs just go away as the platform is pre-integrated for rapid functional activation. So pretty cool.
Makes sense. Okay.
So I'm going to stop us here for 1 second.
Yeah, we have like a couple of minutes, like literally like 2 minutes to talk about maybe MDR, unfortunately.
Oh, absolutely. Right? So I'm going to move through this very, very quickly. A lot of the stuff, you know, we've spoken about already. Cato provides both access control and threat prevention, right? Next generation firewall and secure web gateway. It's our access control. We also have spoken about our next generation anti-malware and IPS. We do all of this at line, right? Whether it's encrypted or not encrypted. Mm-hmm. That's the muscles by which we work. We also have the brains by which we work. And that's the kind of the massive data warehousing that we built from the metadata of all the traffic flows, and then the way we process that. So let's kind of talk a little bit about threat prevention for a moment. You know, normally with IPSs, you need to install signatures. You've got a variety of challenges in maintaining and running an IPS. In addition to an IPS, you also need to be having malware protection. The malware protection that Cato uses, or Cato leverages rather, uses the full traffic visibility that we've spoken about before to extract files and then to analyze files in both a security context, but also in a broader networking context as well. The reason why a managed IPS is so important, this is what Cato's IPS is, a managed IPS, is that when you run an IPS by yourself, there's a whole life cycle that's involved, right? As new signatures get released, they have to be tested, staged, and deployed. It's a big headache. And with Cato, none of that happens. I mean,
do you manage IPS, or you manage the entire platform for the customer?
So let's be clear. Cato offers a variety of management services and you can outsource various aspects of network management to Cato. Right now, we're speaking specifically about the IPS offering, and the IPS offering is a managed IPS offering.
But what you're saying here is that you, from my understanding, you're comparing a local IPS that would run in the company.
Exactly.
With that cloud IPS, which you would maintain, and the beauty in this is that you have this multi-tenant amazing system, and whenever you are updating it there, and you're doing it very often, everyone will benefit and enjoy from it, right?
Absolutely. And in addition, because we're ensuring that the signatures that you deploy aren't going to create false positives, they're not going to adversely impact your network, then our customers get an IPS that's being run in prevent mode. But all too often, IPSs tend to be run in detect mode and not in prevent mode because companies are too afraid to deploy all the signatures they need to deploy because of how it'll adversely affect the rest of their customers.
Last question. If we want to find more information for our customers and listeners, so where they can go, or we could just include this as part of the podcast description, maybe?
This is probably the best place to go, catonetworks.com. And if you want to learn about SASE, you have it there, slash SASE. And it's been great chatting with you folks.
Please remember to subscribe to our podcast and join us for our next episode.